Welcome to On the Other Hand, 10 Minutes of Torah, a podcast presented by ReformJudaism.org. Every week, Rabbi Rick Jacobs, the president of the Union for Reform Judaism, shares a new spin on the weekly Torah portion in 10 minutes or less. Some weeks he's joined by a special guest, and some weeks he shares his own perspective. But On the Other Hand always provides a modern take on over 2,000 years of Jewish wisdom. This week, episode 68 was a special week. Rabbi Jacobs interviewed Abby Pogerben, the author of My Jewish Year, 18 Holidays, One Wandering Jew. Abby is, of course, the wandering Jew in this case, and you should definitely go out and buy her book through your favorite bookseller. Abby and Rabbi Jacobs talk about Parshat Emor, holidays, what the year looks like, and what falls into the not yet category for you.
This week we focus our attention on Parshat Emor from the book of Leviticus, which really lays out the sacred calendar of the Jewish people, at least as we know it in the Torah. And in the Jewish tradition, we have a whole litany of holidays from the Torah, mostly the pilgrimage festivals, Sukkot, Pesach, and Shavuot, also including Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur in the fall festivals. It kind of all gets blended together. But then in Jewish tradition, we have the post-biblical, the rabbinic holidays, and then we have the post-rabbinic, and we have arguably 18 holy days, the core holidays of the Jewish people. Today we have an unbelievable gift because Abby Pogerben is with us, and she has just written a fabulous book, My Jewish Year, built on an experience of spending an entire year, not going through the ones you like, but they're going through the ones that also are really unfamiliar and maybe even awkward. I just think for a lot of our listeners, the Jewish holidays feel like, oh yeah, I know that. I went to Jewish preschool. Like, what's the big deal? In fact, my office used to be, when I first started in the rabbinate, right next to a Jewish preschool. And I could forget what time of year it was, because all of a sudden I hear them going, and there was this bad guy, and he wanted to hurt the Jewish people. But don't worry, there was a Jewish hero who came in and saved the day. And I look at my watch and go, oh, is it Hanukkah? No, it's not Hanukkah. Are they doing Purim? No, it's Passover. And I thought to myself, like, there's almost a familiarity, but sometimes a superficiality. So take us in. You did this entire year. Like, give us a couple of the things that were really surprising, really moving. Pick.
I mean, I think, first of all, I felt a little bit of trepidation in being a little bit of a tourist, being perceived as someone who was parachuting in to something that people live as their daily lives. And I didn't want it to seem superficial or like a gimmick, because it was actually something coming from, driven by a very real urge, a very real need to understand the architecture of Judaism, which I think, if we're really honest about it, that architecture is marked by holidays. It's Jewish time. It's not just the Jewish calendar, it's the Jewish alarm clock. You have to show up, and you don't really have a choice. It's not like DVR, you know. You don't get to choose when your Purim comes up. It just comes up, and you may not be convenient for you. Right. That was one of my biggest takeaways, was the requirements of the Jewish year actually almost double back and force you to slow down, force you to do things, frankly, you might not choose to do otherwise. And that in itself ends up having an impact. That in of itself makes you look at your children differently, look at your husband differently, look at your relationships differently. Over and over again, I found, you know, I interviewed over 60 rabbis. I'm so pleased you're in the book. The thing about these teachers is that not only did no one say no, but no one actually paused before having some incredible door to open for me. And that to me is the luminosity of this tradition. You just peel it back and there's something that challenges your life right now. As ancient, as dusty as these things may be, they are suddenly sparkling and alive and demanding. So that, yeah, I would just say in the overall is what I took away.
Beautiful. So let me just kind of pose the obvious question of, here you did the intense year, you wrote about it as you were experiencing them,
many of us
followed that. So now it's after that year. So did you think that experience of, again, you weren't a tourist, you were really a pilgrim, you were in those moments, is the aftermath, is the long-term impact of that year, that you've intensified some of the holidays you already had on your sacred list? Or did you expand the things that now are part of just what Abby does?
I would say, first of all, you hit on something that was important, which is when I was originally writing the series in real time, it was for the Forward newspaper, and just having to keep up with the preparation before a holiday, and I learned the value of preparation. You know, almost every rabbi said it is like that that marathon metaphor. It's almost a cliche. You cannot walk into Yom Kippur right. and expect to have your heart break open if you have not done, you know, some training to get there. And I would say that was true of every holiday. But, you know, I'm sort of an anal reporter, so I really wanted to dig in deep before a holiday came. Then I wanted to experience it as much as I could wherever I was going to for that ritual or observance. And then sitting down at my laptop and trying to digest what I had experienced as honestly as I could, because it wasn't just going to be rah-rah, it's all incredible. As you said, there were moments of great difficulty, I would say, or places where I didn't quite get it. But in the years that have followed, it's a year and a half now, what I guess has stayed with me without the pressure of having to write about it in real time is that these themes of gratitude, of obligation, responsibility, these are the things that haven't left me. And now the holidays are in my calendar. I didn't know you have this little app that can put them in there. And I realize that I'm paying attention to Jewish time in a way more than to our secular holidays. And I remember the lessons from each of them, which doesn't mean I'm necessarily going and doing exactly what I did. I have chosen to maintain some, but what has not left me are the lessons.
Nice. So the great philosopher Franz Rosenzweig was famously asked about whether he put on tefillin, phylacteries, every day. He didn't say yes or no, he said not yet. So there's a category for all of us, I think, in religious life of the things that, you know, we may not do, we may never do, but we don't just leave them aside, we put them in the maybe, not yet. Are there things from your year they're in the not yet category?
It's a great question. And first of all, I would say it's so important what you're saying about maybe you don't have to do it all. I think so many Jews feel like, oh, this is exhausting. It's overwhelming. And it's an all or nothing thing. So I'm not going to do all. That means I'll do nothing. And if I learned anything this year, and I would be somewhat evangelical about it, is to do the not yet on a few things you haven't tried before, is to dip that toe in and see what happens, knowing that they're foreign waters a little bit.
Right.
I would say that the not yet for me, first of all, was Shabbat. I was very challenged in my Shabbat observance. I've gone, as you know, to Central Synagogue for years on Friday nights, but I really haven't turned off the screens for those 25 hours, and that has been a revelation. And in a way that I didn't expect. That I have maintained. I would say the not yet, though, in terms of Shabbat, is that I still do things that I think if I pared them down, I would feel it even more. The peace, the space, the interaction with people. I'm still struggling with the Sabbath in a way that I was comforted to know a lot of people are. Simchat Torah, believe it or not, was just incredibly uplifting and a surprise to me. Dancing with the Torah, something that is so precious, fragile, almost like a Fabergé egg, most of the year, taken out of the ark the way it is, wrapped on the holidays in this sort of its special, almost birthday suit, to suddenly have it out on the floor, passed from hand to hand, people throwing a talis around them. The permission to be exuberant about this book is something that I just embraced.
So let me ask, you're the president of a spectacular religious community, Central Synagogue, one of the Reformed congregations in our union. I have this thing that somehow we do serious really well. We do intense with great abandon. But joy and happy, not so much. Did you see some divides around sort of the different communities of Judaism? I like to use denominations or movements. And is that is there some truth to that? And if so, can we overcome that? Can we find more joy, more abandon, more fun, more vitality?
You know, it's funny. I interviewed Rabbi Ed Feinstein out in Los Angeles, and he said, you know, enough with Yom Kippur, enough with, you know, all of these depressing holidays. Where's Sukkot in your life, you know? Where's joy? You know, I would say, obviously, a little defensively, that Central has a lot of joy. And I know you know that.
Amen.
Friday night is absolutely delirious. But it's also a place where you can mourn and struggle privately. But I will say that we don't necessarily know, I think, sometimes, what is permitted, since we're not as familiar with the rules. And it doesn't mean that Reform Jews aren't literate. It's just, I don't think that it's in a way as, it's not in our fabric in the same way. And when we're not sure what to do, sometimes it's a little bit harder to just celebrate and know that it can be unfettered. And that then when we come to a Yom HaShoah, we know how to do that too.
Beautiful. So let me just imagine some of our listeners who, you know, kind of are on the edge of the pool, haven't put maybe a toe in, they certainly haven't, you know, just jumped in wholehearted as you
fasted
did.
Fasted 6 days.
Right. So give us some advice. Like, how could we think about, you know, getting our toes in the water, maybe even going up to our waist, however, if the holidays are that water, and just the hesitation that many people have. Maybe it's the not knowing, or maybe it's the, I don't know what there is there to find. I mean, would I really want to, need to? Give some, you know, kind of some heart openings to people.
Yeah. You know, I would say that what was amazing to me was that I had the chance to call a Rick Jacobs and say, let's talk about Passover for half an hour. Not everybody has that opportunity. I was privileged to have it, but I hope...
By the way, I love getting that call because the conversation was so great because your questions, like, got right into the heart. It was not the ordinary question we had.
Yes, but I feel like I really bemoan the fact that not every Jew, frankly, can have that conversation, can pick up the phone and call a Rick Jacobs, but it's not practical. So what do we do then? And I really mean that Jews are important here. I actually don't think we can do this on our own. I understand that eventually we can kind of generate our own meaning, but I think those of you who have made it your life's work to mine the text, to mine the holidays, the rituals, for the new idea, not just because it's newfangled and you want bells and whistles, but because it's there, we need you to kind of, it is almost like a good therapist that opens something up that we hadn't thought of. So I would say that exists more than people realize. If you go on Google and you search a sermon, you know, a small drash, you know, something, an essay, an article, suddenly someone has probed a holiday, a moment, a parsha, in a way that makes you think, oh, well, my goodness, I'm going through that right now in my life. So I would first say to people, do your own research, and your teachers are there. Secondly, I will say, go to some, you know, and find out where something's happening. Sure. Yom HaShoah happened recently in our calendar, and it was a beautiful Sunday. And, you know, one of the rare spring days where you kind of didn't want to go indoors. But to go online and say, I want to mark memory. I want to participate in some way. And maybe no one's invited me, but I'm going to figure out where that's happening. That's a simple idea, but I would suggest it.
I know that our clergy, our rabbis and cantors, we love to get that call. And we have phenomenal rabbis and cantors all around who, if you're hungry for that connection, you can call, you can ask, you can be invited in and find a place. But you can also find reformjudaism.org. We got this incredible wealth of resources. I can suggest the following. You probably will hesitate. I think the book is actually that heart opening. Because I think the book really gets you to experience, my goodness, you know, a fast day. I can't imagine that there's a possibility of a fast day. So you open possibilities that I think for many people were not open. So one question I have is that you look at these holidays, they've actually evolved. The corpus has grown. And, you know, we're in a season right now in the spring where we have the quote, almost, you know, the civil holidays, Yom HaShoah, Yom HaAtzmaut, Yom HaZikaron. Can you see, of the 18 that you lived through, do you think we're missing? And if we're going to grow that corpus to 19, the things that you think just spiritually and in terms of the vitality of contemporary Jewish life that we might need to get our arms around? And if so, what are you thinking?
That's a great question. No one's ever asked me that. Honestly, what I find missing is a time for us all to be together, no matter what we believe Jewishly. And I mean Jews. I think that there are divisions that surprise and disappoint me. I am not naive about why they exist. But when we are such a tiny people, the fact that we are uncomfortable around these things, to me, is such a missed opportunity. If I if I got anything from this book, it was that not only did I have over 62 teachers, but they were all living Jewishly differently. And how incredible for me to be that pilgrim that is able to call Rick Jacobs and Avi Shafran, who's at Aguda Israel, an ultra-Orthodox organization, and have a conversation about the same holiday. Yeah. And that's such a basic idea, but it's missing. Yeah. And in a way, it is our common ground. Right. So a day that celebrates that, to me, would, I think, speak volumes.
Cool, cool. So as we're closing out, I just got to ask you, which is your favorite? I mean, I know you don't want to hurt any holidays' feelings.
Oh,
but they just like one. Which is the one like that right now is like a little more favorite than the others?
Yeah. You know, it's gonna feel a little bit like an anticlimax, but Yom Kippur, and that is just because the deep dive on yourself, the rigorous introspection, to me, and is alive, and it's not just about you. It's about what are you doing in the world. What is the role you are playing in the world? Pay attention to that, because you may not get another chance to live this year.
All right. Well, thank you. What a gift to have this conversation. And I hope people will not only open the book, as I have and thousands of others have, but will be encouraged, excited, and engaged in ways that we just can't always find those doorways. You found them. You opened them for all of us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for this week's episode of On the Other Hand, 10 Minutes of Torah. If you liked what you heard today, and we hope you did, you can find new episodes each week at reformjudaism.org and on iTunes, where we would love for you to rate and review us. And you can visit reformjudaism.org to learn more about all aspects of Judaism, including rituals, culture, holidays, and more. On the Other Hand, 10 Minutes of Torah is a project of the Union for Reform Judaism, a leading voice in the discussion of modern Jewish life. Until next week, Lehitraot.